The Morning Rush podcast is brought to you by Bud Light. Stock up with Bud Light for game days and check out Budweiser's limited edition Freedom Reserve. Please drink responsibly.
They're going to run and get that boot.
This game's still alive and the Hawks have a first down.
Who wants to talk football?
It's Ronnie Wingo, number 20. Touchdown, Arkansas.
They talked the bar.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast.
Conference championship games have been set. And I don't know if you knew this, but the biggest shock in probably all of it is that the New England Patriots are in the AFC title game.
Eight times in a row?
Yeah, I don't think anyone saw that coming. I mean, really big surprise.
Maybe we can spend some time later in the show comparing their domination in their sport to what Alabama's done. I think the Patriots on paper are clearly more dominant. Maybe we'll discuss that. But what they're doing is pretty amazing, even though I don't think any of us would classify this as like the best season the Patriots have ever had or the best team the Patriots have ever had. But here they are again in the quote-unquote Final Four, you know.
This seems like every year it's like, oh, well, you know, maybe this will be the year they finally drop off. Maybe they finally get old. Maybe they finally suck.
Nope. Fountain of Youth, they found it.
Yep.
Tom, terrific.
Yeah. I mean, that's why he is considered the greatest of all time.
I mean, Saban's like the greatest ever in college, but Belichick might be the greatest football coach ever at any level.
And that will be the ongoing discussion that everybody will have. Hey, is it more about Tom or is it more about Bill? Who's really the one here that's kind of driving this bus?
You got to beat them both.
I know. It's like a bad combination.
You got to beat them both. And that's what the Chargers couldn't do yesterday.
Yeah. So we'll talk about a lot of those plays. Plus, you know, the other thing I want to get into, and this is just, you know, something we can discuss again later in the show, too, is Cowboy fans that are out there. I'm not a Cowboy fan.
Are you a Cowboy hater?
I wouldn't say I'm a
hater. Or are you indifferent?
I wouldn't say I'm a hater. I'm more just, I enjoy seeing meltdowns from Cowboy fans and just, and I also enjoy, when I get around those Cowboy fans that talk about we're America's team and yada, 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 I'm like, okay, you've won three playoff games since like 1996. Chill out. All right, you're not this great.
Has it been that many?
I think it's been three, including the one in this year's playoffs.
So, right.
I don't know. It's not been many.
It's not been many.
So, but my point is like the amount of people that were coming out that wanted to fire Jason Garrett, just fire him. It's over. We're tired of this. I honestly, truly, and this is me wanting to know, just my curiosity, if you're a Cowboys fan, why do you want to fire Jason Garrett so bad? You guys lost to the Los Angeles Rams, who is one of the best teams in the NFL. At their place, and it was a pretty close game. At least they were in position to maybe at least tie it late. You lost by 8 points, but why is Jason Garrett the guy you want to get rid of? I'm just curious because maybe I don't know. Maybe I'm seeing something that a lot of people don't see, but that's also something I want to ask a lot of Cowboys fans that we want to get into. And just why do you hate Jason Garrett so much? I feel like there's a lot of coaches out there in a lot of situations.
Because
the next
coach you don't even know who it would be is always better than the coach you've got when things aren't going well.
That's true. Because I'm sure
it's like the next quarterback. It's like the next anything, right?
Yeah. I'm sure they'll think that they'll hire Nick Saban or something like that, and then everything will be okay. So,
right.
But, yeah, there's a lot of storylines to get to from the NFL playoffs.
There's
over the
probably
weekend.
Just as many delusional Cowboy fans that think Belichick would leave New England to come to Dallas.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing how just fan bases in general.
Arkansas has that faction of our fan base.
Yeah, not all of them, but there's a good.
There are some that think like
John
Urban
Gruden.
Meyer. Well, you know, if it doesn't work out with Chad Morris, Urban Meyer would come out of
retirement
and come to. I mean, those kind of what I consider delusional thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just like the whole.
So I'm sure the Cowboys have that 5 or 10% of the fan base that let's get rid of Jason Garrett and go hire Belichick.
Oh, well, if it's that easy, let's just. Can't believe you didn't done it already. But it's never that easy. Yep. There's always more going into it as well. So, but, you know, the thing that obviously a lot of Razorback fans were up in arms about, and rightfully so, was the game against LSU over the weekend in Bud Walton Arena.
Mm-hmm.
They lost in overtime by a final score of 94-88. Very high-scoring affair, especially in the first half where Arkansas found themselves down 50-42 at halftime. Down by 8 points, they gave up 50 points to LSU. Arkansas did manage to climb back into the game, especially late, by tying it up, but at the end of the day, Arkansas could not get the victory. And free throw shooting, 17 of 28 for the Razorbacks, 60%, is the thing that lots of people point to, considering that LSU went 18 of 22 and made 81%.
What's going on with the home floor edge, or the lack thereof? I mean, this is two in a row now
four total.
At Bud Walton Arena. But as you pointed out on Twitter, and anyone that can count to four can get there, this is four this year at Bud Walton. They don't lose four in a year. And I would say they're not done losing at home.
No.
I mean, what is up with this?
It's weird. It's not something you'd ever fathom. I mean, hold on a second. You're telling me this team went on the road to Colorado State, which Colorado State's not a good team, but it's on the road. And they won by over 20 points. Mm-hmm. Tell me they went
basketball.
In basketball, yeah. Not in football. Had a 20-point lead, but we knew what happened to that. But this team also goes on the road to Texas A&M
and wins. Yeah.
But yet, you lose to Western Kentucky, you lose to Georgia Tech. I mean, in fact, I know it wasn't a road game, it was a neutral site game, but in your very first game of the season, you go on the road, technically, to Texas and played a really great game. If you just made a couple free throws, you win it. So it's like, had the role switched here?
I mean, it's not exclusive to Arkansas that road teams are having success on visiting floors. I mean, we've seen the record early on. SEC road teams are winning at a much higher percentage than previous years. I don't have an answer. You know, we were talking with Matt Moscona last week. Was that Friday, I guess, we were doing that ahead of this game to preview it. And he was as perplexed by that as anyone. It doesn't make sense that some of the results we're seeing. So I don't know how this falls in, but Bud Walton has always been considered one of the hardest places in the Southeastern Conference to go win a basketball game. And certainly some of the shines come off of this. Now, the scan tickets were 11,525. Listening to Matt Zimmerman on the radio, he said there was at least 15,000 in there. I don't know.
It was a good-sized crowd.
It was a good-sized crowd. So the fact was the fans showed up. Now, it wasn't 17 or 18,000. It had 17,361 purchase tickets. I don't know what the other 6,000 purchase tickets were doing. I don't know. But it was a good enough crowd to get you through it. So it wasn't a lack of atmosphere. There was clearly a home court edge from the fan perspective. What I'm seeing, though, is a recent trend where Arkansas is falling behind, gets down double digits, 10, 12 points, and then they have to use all of their gas, all of their energy to make a game of it in the end. And I think they just ran out of gas going to overtime. Even though LSU had foul trouble, had some players foul out, LSU comes out early in that and bangs a couple threes. Arkansas finds themselves down six, has to call timeout with, a minute and a half or so into overtime. It was over at that point. Those back-to-back scoring possessions, over. Just played the last 3 minutes out of courtesy.
They came out firing in the overtime
period. Well, Arkansas didn't.
And that's problematic, obviously, especially when you're at home. You should be, especially if they're one that came back into the game to send it to overtime.
I mean, no answer for Naz Reid. I mean, there's about three guys on that they just did not, Waters was another one, that they just didn't have a defensive answer to stop those guys.
Yeah.
Now, in fairness, LSU didn't have much of an answer on Saturday for Daniel Gafford, who ended up with 32, and it was nice to see him get 19 attempts at the basket after getting four putrid looks at the basket in the previous game.
It's amazing what he can do if he has the ball in his hands, isn't it?
It's hard to score when you don't get to shoot.
That's right. 32 points for him, 7 rebounds. I mean, it was a game that you were hoping he would respond with. And even Mason Jones, who seems to be like the quietest guy that goes out there and shoot. I mean, he had 22 points in this game. Mm-hmm. 6 of 10 from the floor, 8 of 9 from the free throw line. He had 6 rebounds. Mason Jones and Daniel Gafford, I mean, for sure were the workhorses, but you had a poor shooting performance by Isaiah Joe. And here's what's crazy about Isaiah Joe. He only had one shot, one three.
Well, in conference play, he hasn't shown up yet.
No, he hasn't gotten to that point. But Reggie Chaney coming off the bench, that was another thing that I have been hoping for, is for somebody to come off the bench, somebody to provide a little spark. Some people feel like Reggie Chaney should probably be taking a lot of the minutes away from Adrio Bailey, which he did in this game. He played 27 minutes, where Adrio Bailey only played 15, but he had 6 of 8 shooting. But you just got – I don't think the offense obviously was the problem. You scored plenty of points. The problem was you being able to stop any of those guys defensively for LSU, and they came in and they weren't scared of you. They have really good talent, especially Naz Reid. 10 of 12 from the field, 4 of 4 from the 3-point line, 27 points. You're not going to slow that down, but you know it's the tale of two games. Where Florida game, you didn't score enough. This game, you scored enough, but you couldn't keep them from scoring.
You talk about defense. You get into a situation the last couple of games where Gafford picks up 4 fouls, and then you put him back in. You know, and in the Florida game, he got his 4th foul with like 9 minutes to go. Goes to the bench, then comes back in right after the under 8 timeout. Plays like the last 7 minutes without fouling out. But how much real defense can you play when you're playing that tentative? When
Not
you know you cannot play aggressive defense. And you can be present, but it's hard to play a good brand of defense with 4 fouls. Mm-hmm. Isaiah Joe had 4 fouls. Reggie Chaney fouls out. So you had guys with foul trouble. Arkansas only had 1 player foul out.
Bigby
Williams
guys,
fouled out for LSU. And that was
Smart.
And Smart fouled out. Yeah, those were critical players. And and when you have an overtime game, you're just more likely to have guys fouling out. But the point being, we've seen a couple of games where Daniel Gafford's picked up that 4th foul, but he still has to play. You still got to roll the dice. You still got to gamble because he's got to be on the floor. You cannot win with him on the bench. So he can only take a very brief break, and then he has to go play very tentative defense. And I think that also, the other team knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Take advantage of that.
Yeah, and they always do. But, there's another thing, too, and I know we have to get out of here, and we'll continue to discuss this as the show goes on, but there's 2 things also that I wanted to add to your points. Number one, I feel like there should be a rule in NCAA. If it goes to overtime, everyone gets you get 6 fouls to foul out, or at least maybe if you have 4 fouls,
it's
you
not
get
the
more.
Worst idea I've ever heard.
I'd like to see something like that. And the other thing, Will Wade might have the most punchable face of any coach I've seen. There's just something about him when I'm looking at him, like, I don't trust you. You look like you work at Enterprise Rent-A-Car and you're trying to screw me over in a deal or something like that. Like, he has that look.
Didn't you work at Enterprise
Rent-A-Car? And I would know. Exactly. I would know about that smug look.
That's why that reference is weird.
Yeah. Yeah. I would know all about that.
Is that a punchable face right there?
Absolutely.
Very punchable face.
You put out a poll in any newspaper, and who's the most punchable face in sports media? John R. Numbers.
Yeah. Well, you don't have very good luck with your polls that you put out,
true.
So I don't know if we need to go down that route.
Arkansas's home for the best sports talk. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Adams with it at the 45. Adams skip it. Adams gets outside. Watch out. Hits the sideline. The Jet. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Now, this storyline's a weird one, just to be honest with you. You know, we've been talking a lot about the Razorback basketball team, and we'll get into that. But this one dealing with the Miami Dolphins' possible defensive coordinator. Now, you're wondering, why? Why? Who cares? Who cares about the Miami Dolphins' defensive coordinator? Well, when Brett Bielema's name is being rumored as being the possible defensive coordinator for the Miami Dolphins, like it is right now, very possible that he moves from Bill Belichick's staff with the Patriots to become and fill into that role. A lot of questions get asked, for one, of why Brett Bielema, of all people, to be into that role. So it goes deeper than that, and the questions start arising, but the initial reaction to this in this news, because it's not official, but just the fact that this is a possibility was pretty shocking to people, considering the last time they saw him in a full-time coaching role was pretty abysmal.
But you've got a member of the Patriots staff that's rumored to be the next head coach for the Dolphins, right?
Correct.
And then you've got Bielema, who's been around Belichick and this staff all year long. So it's all about relationships. It's about people you know. Rarely do you open up a job of any importance to just, hey, we're going to accept applications. You go back to the people you know, the people you have relationships, people you trust. It's no like trust. And clearly, Bielema has developed good relationships with his existing staff and has shown, you know, his ability to help put a game plan together, his ability to help coach play, all of these things.
Patriots linebacker coach Brian Flores, by the way, is the guy that's looking to take over.
He's their linebackers coach, and he calls the defense. He calls the plays on the defensive side, too. It was mentioned in yesterday's game.
Right.
Now, is it a bit of a surprise? Probably we're jaded because of what happened at Arkansas. This guy's evaluating football and football only. He didn't care about recruiting. He didn't care about anything. But can you show up and do the job, and can you coach football?
And that leads me into the question, since you brought that up. Is Brett Bielema a bad coach?
I don't think you can look at the course of his career and come up with a conclusion that he's a bad football coach.
So is it just an outlier, or at least something that was besides on the coaching, actual coaching, that ended up being his demise at Arkansas? Because this is where people come into it, where you see the success of Wisconsin, and you can't deny it, even though we all know that he took over a very solid program under Barry Alvarez, a healthy program. He took it over and sustained it. Well, for the most part, they had some down years here and there, but he sustained success.
I'm going to tell you, as a program, and nobody likes to talk about this, but you stop and think about what has happened. Arkansas's program has been a career killer. Houston Nutt, Arkansas, had success, left here, Ole Miss, what's he done since? Done, over, on TV. All right, Bobby Petrino was here, then he went to Western Kentucky. Now, his situation was totally different. Obviously, he had success. But now his career is teetering, right?
Mm-hmm.
John L. Smith, whatever. Brett Bielema comes here, doesn't have success. His career's derailed. I mean, at some point in the coaching community, I get concerned that having Arkansas on your resume recently is like a pariah, something you don't want any part of. Ooh, no. As a head coach, because that seems to be... You know, you look at a few of the guys that have coached here in the last 15 years, and within a job of them being at Arkansas, they leave Arkansas under various circumstances, some of it for not winning enough, and within their next job, they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Can't get a job.
Why is that?
But is that all coincidence?
I don't know if it's coincidence, because you brought up Houston Nutt and Brett Bielema, for instance, as those coaches, and it's like, okay, Houston Nutt had the success, but elsewhere he did not at Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Brett Bielema had success elsewhere.
I mean, there was other things. And
right.
There's
right.
always other things, it seems
right,
like.
But his final 2 years, there was no doubt that they were pretty good. He won 10 games in eight games.
Well, last year, he didn't coach the Cotton Bowl, but his team went to the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, and there's no doubt that 07 team should have been better. We can revisit that at some other time. But it wasn't as bad as of an ending as like for Brett Bielema. Yeah.
Goes to Ole Miss, and then he hadn't coached since.
So it makes you wonder, like for Houston Nutt, did Arkansas make Houston Nutt better, or did Houston Nutt make Arkansas better?
Mm-hmm.
But because when he goes to Ole Miss, he took over a crazy talented team from Ed Orgeron. I mean, he had NFL pros all over the place. Went 9-4 back-to-back years, and then just, I think he went 2-10 in his last year. So, I mean, Arkansas knows a little bit about that. They did that at Ole Miss. But then, like, Brett Bielema, he was at Wisconsin. And even when he was hired as Arkansas's football coach, there were some people that had their skepticisms. But nobody came out and said that he would be an epic failure in the way that he was. People thought that he'd at least be able to sustain a 7-type win success per year. But he didn't do that. And so it makes you wonder, okay, did Houston not do so well at Arkansas and so bad at Ole Miss because Arkansas was that much of a better situation? Did Brett Bielema do so good at Wisconsin and so bad at Arkansas because Arkansas wasn't a good program and it wasn't a good situation that brought him down? You know, it's just they're two different situations, but both of them, once they left in weird situations and they left in bad situations. And so it goes to make you wonder that is how much of Arkansas plays into this factor? Is it more about the coach or is it more about the program? Did Arkansas not do a... I'm not saying they didn't do a good job, but just was it easier to win at Wisconsin than it was at Arkansas? I think there's no doubt. But you're telling me that Brett Bielema, with the success he had at Wisconsin, couldn't go at least make a bowl game every year? Couldn't at least have some sort of success being able to be consistent in it? I think that there were other factors that played into Brett Bielema's demise. I think we all know that.
Obviously, whatever those personal issues were, and I think some of us have an idea what they were, but you know whatever was going on in his life, professionally and personally, must be resolved. Is it Flora, as you said, that the rumor to be the next coach?
Yeah, linebacker.
Flora is ready to give him possibly a chance to be the defensive coordinator for the Miami Dolphins.
Yeah.
he has seen enough in the time that, and this is what Bielema's had to do. He's kind of had to take an internship, if you will. Now, it's been a pretty good paying internship.
I wouldn't mind that internship.
While he's also getting paid from Arkansas, so you lump it all together, it's been a pretty sweet deal. But it, more or less, it's an entry-level coaching job he's been performing this season. But he's done that to help start the rehabilitation of his coaching career.
Yeah,
because there were what suitors were there? There wasn't like, you know, a dozen schools lined up ready for him to be the next head coach after he was fired at Arkansas. I mean, it wasn't like schools were pleading for him to come there.
Because it's, well, can you compare it to the other situations? There were, obviously, Ole Miss was one of them with Houston Nutt. I mean, there were a lot of people that said, man, I'd take Houston Nutt right now. Look what he did at Arkansas.
And they did.
Same thing with Petrino. Even though he had his whole situation that was terrible, people were still like, yeah, well, but we'd overlook that.
Yeah, but he went to Western Kentucky for
For 1 year, and then he got hired at Louisville, which you know ended up being a huge jump considering where he was.
But ended badly.
Yeah, but ended badly. But
it always ends badly.
But it comes back to it, and maybe it's just living in the moment. And I think that we've seen the result with this past season under Chad Morris. The whole unfortunate thing about this, and maybe this is too harsh. Actually, I don't think it's too harsh. Brett Bielema torpedoed the Razorback football program in a way and in a fashion that has never been seen before. And I think that there's always going to be a little bit of disdain for that him as an individual because of the way that the program went to the way it is now and that he is the main guy to blame.
My point was Arkansas just hasn't seemed to be a launching pad for any coach. That you come to Arkansas, you have success for 4 or 5 seasons, and then it's on to greater things. And, man, they went to the playoff. Or, man, they accomplished this wonderful feat. Won a conference title somewhere else. Had this great accomplishment. Now, Petrino did have a Heisman Trophy winner post Arkansas, but you look at this last few years of guys. There's been no sustained success. Nutt took Ole Miss to the Cotton Bowl, if you want to consider that. But you know, Arkansas has not been like this launching pad for the last 3 or 4 head coaches either.
Yeah. I mean, even Ken Hatfield, when he left for Clemson, he had a couple good years, but it was never to the level as other guys. And you know, of course, we know that Frank Broyles didn't leave.
Lou Holtz might be the last one that went on to did
something.
Great things after Arkansas.
Yeah, because in fact, he won the national championship just 5 years after leaving Arkansas at Notre Dame. So, you know, maybe that was the case there. But I see what you're saying. There's not a lot of situations and there's not a lot of times that you can go back and look at that. But it goes to make you wonder, is it more about the program or is it more about the coaching hires?
That's the thing. Nobody,
yeah. I mean, nobody wants to hear that.
Can't be about the program.
But don't you think, though, that it's...
It can't be the lack of a recruiting base in Arkansas. Don't talk about that.
But can it be, though? Because look at Houston Nutt. Is there no doubt that Houston Nutt should have better years than what he did?
Of course.
Why? Because he had talent. He just didn't do anything.
And where did that talent come from?
Arkansas.
Yeah.
Majority of it, at least. A good bit of it.
Two of the three running backs he did had Peyton Hillis and McFadden. The other one came from the Tulsa area.
Hey, a guy named Matt Jones. Ever heard of him? Yeah, he was pretty good.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they had those elements to it. So there's just a lot of situations, too, that you can look at from Arkansas's perspective in certain seasons that they either overachieved or underachieved, and it makes you wonder, okay, is it more about the program or is it more about the coach? I think it's more about the coach. You just got to get the guy in there.
But the coach can't control when the best talent in the last 25 years comes out of this state.
No.
That was other thing. You know, Bielema never got... Petrino got that run early where he had Joe Adams, he had Tyler Wilson, he had a lot of great in-state recruits. You know, Bielema had one or two or three across the way, but there was never that crop where you got 8 or 9 or 10 at one time.
But he had a crop of great recruits when he first got in that some of them weren't from the state of Arkansas.
Right, but you got to have a couple of years of that. And that was just, and then some other breaks. It just never lined up for Bielema here.
No, but Bielema, the biggest mistake that he made, and of many, was the fact that he was unable to hire competent coaches at the assistant level after the really good ones left. We know that when Sam Pittman left or Randy Shannon left, like all these guys that were really good, he wasn't able to overcome that. Yeah. And he didn't recruit well. He stopped recruiting. He did.
So how will, if he ends up being the defensive coordinator, if you're just hopping in, that's why we're discussing this. Brett Bielema, reports are he's rumored to be the next defensive coordinator with the Miami Dolphins, perhaps. How will he do? And will we ever see him as a head coach again on any level?
If I'm just basing it off my gut feeling right now, I think he will do average. like we don't have enough to see what he's done in a coordinator role.
The problem will be when you're a coordinator or coach of anything at the Miami Dolphins, you're in the same division with who?
Patriots.
And Belichick and Tom Terrific and all. I mean, good luck.
Yeah.
Now, this makes perfect sense for Brett because he loves Florida. He loves South Florida.
Yeah.
Wife's family's there.
Bert.
He loves the deep sea fishing. This is ideal for him.
Yeah, but maybe it needs to be less ideal for him if he wants to focus on his job.
Well,
because as we know from what happened at Arkansas, sometimes that stuff outside of the program and outside of football can be distracting. Mm-hmm. And that's the last thing Brett Bielema needs to do if he wants to get his career back on point. So, but just an interesting thing. If the Dolphins want to go with Brett Bielema, all right, we'll see how it goes. But definitely an interesting hire. I would like to see it.
I like the guy personally. I wish he'd have had more success at Arkansas. I thought he was a fun head coach to cover. He just didn't win enough games.
Mm-hmm. And he torpedoed
and there's
the
a lot of there's a lot of reasons as to why. But, I mean, I personally hope he has professional success.
I don't.
Subscribe to the show on iTunes. You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle. And Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas. 80 yards.
All right, let's go to the phone lines. We're now joined by Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Tom. How are you doing this morning, man?
I'm doing very well. Good to be on with you guys.
Well, it's always good to have you, as there's a lot we want to get to with you over the weekend. We'll start with the Razorback basketball team. 1-2 now in conference play, Tom. Two losses, back-to-back losses in SEC play at Bud Walton Arena. That makes four Bud Walton Arena losses on the season. Obviously, this game going to overtime made for a good game, but Arkansas just fell short, came up short there the very end. I mean, what do you make of this performance, considering the performance they had against Florida on Wednesday night, now with back-to-back losses?
Well, right now they're a team that's close, and it's kind of like 2017 football, 2016 football with Brett. Close. All these games have been tight. They've won a couple late, but largely, you know, you think about Western Kentucky and Georgia Tech, and, you know, they did hang on in the A&M game, but there's going to be a lot of games like this in conference play, and when you drop them at home, you're just falling further and further behind. You have more of a hill to climb. And to be honest, coming up against Tennessee and Ole Miss on the road, two teams that have won 10 consecutive games, it's going to be really hard to prevent from going 1-4 in conference play.
All right, hot take real quick. This is a tournament team. What you've seen so far, you've seen 15 games. Is this a team going to the NCAA tournament?
Oh, man, no. I mean, they can't, not with their net rankings right now. And you know, but the opportunity is there. If they are able to score some road wins, they can upset Tennessee, and they still got Auburn and Kentucky left to play. A lot of teams that have been ranked, teams that have high RPI ratings. But on the course they're on, no, there's no way. And the likelihood is that they're going to be 1-4 after they finish up Tennessee and Ole Miss. And then where do you go from there? Because Mike Anderson teams have improved, and I know he said after the game Saturday that – you know, this is what we do. We get better in the season, and we're going to be a better team in February than we are January. We're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And he has a good track record of being able to figure it out. So, but this is going to be one of the toughest, you know, assignments that they've had in his years to rebound from this and make a play for the tournament.
And that's correct about, you know, they play their best basketball late February into March. That has been Mike Anderson's track record. The problem is, Tom, they don't play at a level that gets them to where they can earn a seed that helps them get to the second weekend of the tournament. That's my take on it, is because of the play in January, that's why you end up playing North Carolina in the second round. Because you mess around in January.
A couple of years ago, and then the Butler draw. I mean, you need to go win the game against Butler. Mm-hmm. So, but I'm with you, Tommy. There's been a couple of really good years. You know, the Portis year, and then they had another one a couple of years ago, Barford Macon and those guys. So, at the current rate, even if they do make the tournament, like you're saying, they would not have a would not have a seed that lends a generous seed that lends to making a run. So they've got a lot of work to do, and you know, this Tennessee game coming up Tuesday, I'm covering that one. That's going to be something. I've watched some Tennessee games, and they have a plan. I mean, they attack, they rebound, they've got shooters. Bone is an excellent creator. He's a great shooter. And then they got rebounders like Williams, who's just a gritty guy, and then the tall ones like Kyle Alexander. So they've got Schofield, who does, you know, inside, outside.
Admiral Schofield, best name in basketball. Admiral Schofield.
Yeah. Yeah, he's and so just trying to hang in there and get a win against Tennessee is going to be tough.
Speaking with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now on the Morning Rush. Tom, we mentioned the starts that Mike Anderson teams get off to in conference play, and it seems like every single year. In fact, it probably it's not seemed like it is every single year. They start off slow and then they get it going late in conference play. Why is that? Why is it every single year that it's this way? Is there some type of thing you can point to for that reason, or is it just the way that Mike Anderson teams are built?
You know, I don't know if there's just a specific array of things that you can point to, but I do think getting more in tune with what each other's trying to do offensively. They put so much effort into being a great defensive team, and they are. I mean, Arkansas and Tennessee are the number one and number two teams in the conference in field goal defense. Mm-hmm. Tennessee's number one, 37.2, and Arkansas is next, 39.3. So they're playing pretty good defense. They're a good team in transition. They're a good team when when they get to go up and down the floor. But the half court is what Florida forced them into. You could tell that they were not very comfortable in how they got guys open, how they made sure Daniel Gafford touched the ball. And I think that's just a thing that gets better over time. Now, you wish that they could be better right now because they could have had wins against Western Kentucky and Georgia Tech, and maybe they'd have won one of these two home games against Florida or LSU, and then we'd be thinking about them in a different light. But because they haven't closed out these tight games, you wonder how that works on their psyche. And I know that Mike Anderson and his staff are going to do a good job of getting them to be, you know, more competitive and improve as it goes on. But this is a little bit deeper hole than they've had. And so, for instance, I want to say there was an 0-3 start or a 1-3 start under Macon and Barford, and they really turned it around. And they won a game at Tennessee and things like that. So the improvement curve needs to get a lot steeper very quick.
Tom, Isaiah Joe, 2-for-5, 5 points, 5 rebounds, 34 minutes against Florida, 6 points, similar performance. A young player that there was a lot of promise for in the November-December part of the schedule you thought was going to be key, and so far in conference play hasn't performed to that level. What's going on with Isaiah Joe? Is it just the level of the SEC's catching up, or why is Isaiah Joe not the same player he was in the pre-conference season?
Yeah, I think you're right. Just the level of the SEC to begin with. And also, you know, when you're playing non-conference, there's scouting reports, but he went out and burned people from three-point range. Well, these SEC teams aren't going to give him as many open looks. And so that plays a role in it. And, you know, it's a long season. And as a freshman, he got out to a really good start. And I know he was on pace to break all the three-point shooting records or made three-pointers at Arkansas. But the scouting report is out. And it's a little bit tougher. He's just got to get a little little stronger, and get his confidence back a little bit more, because it has been a little bit of a lull for him. When he's on and Harris is creating and Jones is making threes, and they can make people have to not be able to sag on Gafford as much, they're a much better team. So you can't hang it all on a freshman in terms of this lull they're in. But the fact that he's not playing to the level he did in some of the earlier games certainly is having a role in where they are right now.
Tom, I want to switch it up a little bit. Something we discussed was about going with the NFL. We have a situation where Brett Bielema
is rumored to be a possible candidate for the defensive coordinator job with the Miami Dolphins. And this has been some shock to some people because it's like, hey, the last time this guy was in a full-time coaching role was with Arkansas. We know how that ended. But just from your thoughts, you covered Brett Bielema. You know the teams. You know what he's been able to do. Is this a little surprising to you? And do you think that he is actually a good coach? He was just in a bad situation at Arkansas?
No, I mean, I think being a defensive coordinator is right down his alley. I think he knows defensive football. I think he's kept up with trends. I mean, he was up – it's a tough thing to win at the top level of the SEC, and especially when Alabama is completely on top of the game and your key opponents like LSU, Auburn, and A&M put more money in football and are in more talent-rich areas than you. It's tough. Now, they were not able to kind of reach full fruition under Brett Bielema, that is for sure. But I don't think the game's passed him by, and his time with the Patriots certainly has kept him involved in, you know, the current NFL model. And what it is trying to defend guys like Patrick Mahomes and teams to get the ball out quick like the Saints do and defend the Chiefs, who when you watch them week to week, their game plans, the way they get defensive eyes going in one direction, they ran a play with Tyreek Hill in motion, then he switched sides, then faked a little swing pass to him and threw a screen to Kelsey. And it's just the design of these things is so beautiful. And that's where NFL football is now. And, you know, I think Brett, it wouldn't take him long to get back in terms of scheming up for that kind of thing and drafting and developing the type of players that you need to defend that. So it wouldn't shock me at all.
Hey, we talked last week, I think we talked with you about Ty's story and the transfer portal and his name being on there. Chad Morris has made some comments since then. Just some thoughts from you on where Arkansas's at through the weekend. I know Ben Hicks was in. Everybody seems to be on point watching what's going on with players coming and going on visits and what's happening with Arkansas's quarterback position and transfers.
Yeah, well, with the semester starting, they'll need to have someone in, I think it's by Friday, to, you know, be enrolled for this semester. So unless they can get someone in quickly, unless there's moving on Hicks or someone else that, you know, we may be unaware of, then they might have to go through spring ball with the group they've got, which could mean, you know, hey, Connor Nolan, can you stay up here a little bit more often? I don't know how that's all going to play out. But, you know, we'll be talking to Chad soon and also Dave Van Horn. So, I don't know if Hicks is the ultimate answer. Does it make their quarterback room better? Probably so. I think so. He knows the system. So from the sound of it, it felt like Ty Story, you know, had one foot out of the door, but you know, they can come back. It's not a definite that you're in the portal, you're gone. So we'll see how all that plays out in the coming days.
All right, last one before we let you get out of here, Tom. Rams and Saints, Chiefs and Patriots this weekend. Who you got?
Yeah, I want the Rams to win. To the idea of the Saints playing a Super Bowl in my stadium, I don't like that. And the Eagles had their chance, and that ball was right in Alshon Jeffrey's hand.
Yeah.
So that was sickening. And then on the other side, I like the Chiefs. You know, regional team, a great young talent like Patrick Mahomes. I'd love to see him succeed. And the Patriots have had their run, so let's go Rams and Chiefs and see how it goes. The old Missouri team.
All right, well, there you have it. You got it. Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Always appreciate you joining us, Tom, man. Great stuff. Catch up with you on Thursday, all right?
You betcha. See y'all.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.